staff, and distinguished guests. We can move on to citizens' comments. If you guys have stuff to talk about, you can talk about it then. So, anybody else, citizens' comments? No, moving along. Mix for 3rd, 2024. I'm good with them. Everybody else?
All good.
All right. EDC.
Recording in progress.
Perfect. EDC 2025-01 building permit report for November 2024.
All right, we did 81 building permits in November, 11 single-family detached and 6 single-family attached, 13 commercial permits.
I'm good, everybody else? All right. EDC 2025-02 building inspection report for November 2024.
We did 433 inspections. Majority of those were single-family detached homes.
Cool. Everybody good? All right. EDC 2025-03 property maintenance report for November 2024.
All right. In November, we didn't hear any cases before the hearing officers. People were not in the mood for violations, so ended up being pretty good. We had 2 cases come up. One was closed, and one was still in violation as of the time of the meeting.
All right. EDC 2025-04 economic development report for December 2024.
You have your report in your packet. The only update I have is that Tropical Smoothie Cafe is actually opening tomorrow.
Okay.
Tomorrow morning they will be open.
All right, that moves us on to EDC 2025-05 Beecher Solar Farm Special Use and Variance.
Yes, so Beecher Road Solar is requesting special use and variance permit approval to construct a 30-acre solar farm north of Cornelius Road, west of Beecher Road, and east of Illinois Route 47. The variance is specifically to reduce the setback from the required 1,000-foot from the nearest solar array to Cornelius Road to 482 feet. Right now, given that Cornelius Road will likely become a major arterial roadway, the 1,000-foot buffer remains applicable. Further project information can be found in the packet. However, the petitioner did mention that they will be providing further information regarding staff's comments on the glare. And then, there's standard recommendations for abandoned systems and the engineering comments. And then lastly, the variance for the reduced setback from the near solar array to Cornelius Road is not supported by staff. And this will go to PZC on February 12th. The presentation for the project will be held at the March 11th City Council. And then the final vote is scheduled for March 25th.
Dan, you have some quick comments?
Sure. Dan Kramer on behalf of the petitioner, and I have the usual lineup: Hannah Ushides, Matt Kwiatkowski, and our engineer Michael Keith. If you have any specific questions, you've all seen NextStamp before. They've got the first unit out there that was done on Gary and Betty Bennett's farm. This is the second final unit on the Bennett farm, and the Bennett's live right at the front of the property, so they would be most affected by it, and they're fine with the plan. They will stay as the underlying owner, NextStamp, and they're doing this one. They use them as separate LLCs, but it's the same group you saw on Yorkville Renewables in the first one on the Bennett property. So they've got a short presentation. We're happy to answer any questions. You know, they're a quality developer, what they've done before and how they've become part of the community. So I'll be quiet.
All right.
I have my laptop too.
Bart, there's a presentation that we can download on the computer here.
Okay.
All right. So are you going to allow her to have control, or?
Oh, yeah. If you click share, it should prompt me to authorize it.
All right.
Sure. Or it should just allow you to do it, one of the two.
Thank you.
Yeah,
but you got to download
that. And you'll have to choose either the window or the automatic.
Those are just copies of the presentation.
Says you are sharing.
My end.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, sorry, hold on, you're set up. Sorry. Nope, I can see it too now.
Just do slideshow. Like a pop.
Hi everyone, and thank you for having us here today. My name is Hannah Udicious, and I'm a business developer at Maxant. Dan introduced our team, but just one more round. Dan's our attorney on the project, with Matt Krakowski, who's also a business development manager at Maxant. And then our engineer of record for the project is Michael Keith from Atwell. We're presenting today on Beecher Road Solar LLC. It's a 4.99 megawatt AC community solar project. This is our application for special use and variance. And I do want to ask the group, I know we've next one just presented a couple times, so we have some intro slides on who we are as a company and some of our facilities. I know we might be slight on time. I'm happy to go through that.
No.
Or if everyone wants to jump, we could jump a couple slides.
Yeah, we'll just go to the project.
Okay, and then we all have, you have all the packets with the information here. You can go another slide. Here we are. So we'll just start on the area map. So what I would say is, now that we're acquainted with Nexamp, here's the project location, but we are a little bit acquainted already. So this is Beecher Road Solar LLC. It sits just north of Cornelius Road. It's 1,500 feet to the west, to the east of Beecher Road, and about approximately 4,000 feet to the west of State Route 47. It sits on two parcels, 0208300-008. That is the area that the solar array will be located on. And then the parcel to the east, 0208300-012. This parcel, the access road, will be utilized, existing gravel access road, and it'll be used for utility poles. Some project details. We just gave the project location, 10791 Cornelius Road. It's zoned as A1SU, Agriculture Special Use District. I gave the parcels. The owners are Gary and Betty Bennett. The parcel size, approximately 69.64 acres. The project size, approximately 23.6 acres. Project capacity, 4.99 megawatts AC. And the project life is 30 to 40 years, so this is a temporary use of the farmland. Next slide. So I want to situate this project a little bit because we have been before this group before. So Beecher Road Solar LLC is the second project that Nexamp is proposing on these parcels. We, back in May of the beginning of 2024, we petitioned for annexation from the county into the United City of Yorkville, as well as a rezoning to the zone that it is now at A1SU. And then we received the special use permit in May 2024. So the project to the north, this is Cornelius Road Solar LLC, that's already received the special use permit. We're proposing the project to be in the north of that project. We will be using the shared access drives. Our civil engineer of record is going to talk more about the design later in the presentation, but it is worth stating that Beecher Road Solar LLC is a separate project and standalone to the previous project. They are not going to be connected. They're fenced separately, and they will have their own utility poles. So now that we kind of have a sense of the project site, I want to situate in the development that's happening around the parcel in Yorkville. So starting with the parcel itself, the land, kind of with the impetus of this whole project, was that Gary and Betty were interested in doing a second project. We were interested. We built up a really good relationship with the first project. So we put forth the application with the utility to give the second project a go. And so really it started off with Gary and Betty being really excited about the project and wanted it as a way to set themselves up for their retirement. You know, Gary has some health concerns that are going on, and it would be a way to set him and his family up and utilize the land. We believe that having a project at the on these parcels is compatible with the surrounding uses. To the west, we have the ComEd substation, and that's the really attractive piece that's bringing in all of the heavy power-using industrial development, like Bright Farms, LLC, along Cornhills Road and Elbermaine. And then we have the permitted 223-acre data center, and then this parcel here where there's an attempt to do a rezoning for the data center. So you have many projects that are popping up along Cornhills Road in this area that are really heavy power users, industrial type developments that are heavy power users. Then we have to the north of the parcel, Cornhills Road Solar, just discussed that one. And then also Yorkville Renewables, that one was recently permitted with the city. It's also a NextAmp project. I made these slides before that one was permitted, but that one sits right here. So you have solar projects, agriculture, and then right here to the north, directly to the north of the project is a decommissioned landfill. So we feel that this project is really well suited for the area because it will bring more electricity in an area that's really that's creating a lot of power users, as well as really light traffic. You know, data centers don't require many employees or cars to go down Cornelius Road. Additionally, the parcel itself is sitting in a IDNR floodway. So there's not a whole lot of development potential.
We need to pause
potential.
Here for a second. Drea, can you, you need to unshare and then either share the presentation screen or after you hit the slideshow, like you should be able to share the entire monitor that's on the wall, and then when you hit F5 or hit the slideshow to start, it should go out there. Nobody else can see their own slides. So it should prompt you to share monitor 1 or monitor 2. There you go. That's it. Thank you.
Sure. So we believe the project is well suited for this area. The parcel itself is located in IDNR floodway, so the parcel itself really doesn't have a whole lot of development potential. And then giving the uses that are around it, you have the landowner's residence, you have their family, you know, the Bennett's family residence here. Not a great use to have other developments popping up, especially when you have a decommissioned landfill to the north. So we think solar really fits this special niche where there's not a lot of uses for future development, and solar is possible, and our engineer will kind of talk about that later. Moving on, the view shed. So when you're driving down Cornhills Road, our landowner, the Bennett's, their house, barn, the trees, they really block the view shed. If you're driving down, you really got to cock your head in order to really see. I know that's a big concern that comes up with any of these solar projects. And Mike will talk more about the landscaping that we're proposing in order to address view shed, but it's really limited for this project. And lastly, you know, right now Cornhills Road really isn't used as a major thoroughfare. The project's not super visible from the lot frontage. And so we think for that reason it also is well situated. I'll go next slide. So again, this is a parcel that previously wasn't in the jurisdiction of the United City of Yorkville. By bringing it into the city, when we rezoned and annexed in, additional tax revenue has been unlocked, and that kind of is depicted here from how the land stands now. But what we're offering to the United City of Yorkville is unlocking 4 times what we've already done. And that is by providing solar taxes yearly for our lease area at $29,470, the majority of which would go to the school district. And we think this is really, you know, lucrative because it's in an area that is not developable. You know, it's in a floodway. It's unlocking tax revenue next to an existing solar project next to a decommissioned landfill, you know, on the property where the landowners, there are residents. And again, the grid stabilization piece. There's a lot of data centers and heavy industry, heavy power users that are that you're interested in putting in this area, and having an additional solar farm will help stabilize that grid. Again, this is a temporary use of farmland. So by the time that, you know, something can happen different in the future on this piece. And then again, with any of our projects, utility savings is unlocked for residents. For this project specifically, it's about 650 residential subscribers. One more slide for me. So here's the due diligence of what we've already went through, kind of the due diligence we've already been through on this project. You know, we've done the site selection and executed lease with the landowner. We've completed a survey. We've done pre-application discussions with the city. We've done utility studies with ComEd. We've completed shipboat consultation. We've completed endangered species review. We've completed wetland delineation. We've completed FAA consultation. We've completed NRI. We've entered into an agreement with the Illinois Department of Agriculture, the AMA agreement. And then we're still in progress on our IDNR floodway permit and drain tile surveys that we would shore up after permitting. And with that, I'm going to pass it off to Michael Keith.
Good evening. I'm Mike Keith. I'm the civil engineer of record with Atwell LLC. Just going to run over through the site plans and the layout. So let's start with the setbacks. We're required to be 50 feet off the side, off the sides, the rear, and then 1,000 feet off of Cornelius Road. We meet all the 50-foot setbacks off the side and the rear, but we don't, as Sarah mentioned, we're at just shy of 483 feet from the front to the closest point, which is right in this area. And then it does go back to the Cornelius Solar, which is further north of the site. As Hayman mentioned, we do have Cornelius Solar up here. Here's the existing access road we permitted with Cornelius Solar. So we are utilizing the same access point on the road, the same road to the site, and then we'll just bring a site in, an access road into our site. Down here, we will have two sets of poles because it is two separate projects. So we're gonna kind of flank them on both sides of the access road. The equipment is in the middle of the site. We do that to make sure it's the furthest away from all the property lines as far as we can get away from them. And then as also Sarah noted, there is a floodplain that comes through this area. We are staying out of the floodplain for the equipment pads. The panels will be in the floodplain. We will follow the necessary paperwork with IDNR. Same as we did with Cornelius, we're not anticipating it having a detrimental effect to the floodplain, so we don't anticipate any issues there. Next slide, please. So here's a blow-up of our landscaping plan. Mainly, this one I wanted to just draw your attention. Internal, we're going to do the pollinator mix, like with all solars. We're going to do the pollinator mix. That helps with the stormwater management and helps stabilize the site. Go to the next slide, please. So this is a blow-up of our fence line. Down here is Cornelius Road. We are going to plant in an evergreen trees and shrubs along our site frontage to help screen it, and then also help add to the makeup of the neighborhood. If you go to the next slide, please. This is a picture from Cornelius Road looking back into the site. Our site's going to sit here. So it's coming from right here before we get to the houses. If you go to the next slide. This is a rendering. We're anticipating if this is farmed, it would be farmed and given back to the owners, but we just put grass in here for now. But we did superimpose the solar facility with the buffer and the landscaping, so you can kind of see what that would look at maturity of the trees, and kind of how it's going to look in the future. And then the access road is still the same access road that we're utilizing. Next slide, please. And then this is a view through the farmland existing today. And then the next view, again, we superimpose the solar panels with the landscape. So you kind of get an idea as you're going through. this view isn't as, it gets blocked by the farm, but the other view kind of shows a good look going back into the solar facility. And then with that, this is just a really good picture of what the pollinator mix will look when it's properly established and when it's out there on the site. With that, I'm going to turn it back over to Dan and have some closing comments.
Again, we're happy to answer any questions. We know you don't vote at the committee here. Obviously, I think the gorilla in the room is the front setback. As your ordinance stands now, there isn't a 1,000-foot setback. And this hasn't been in any of the literature of the city shown as a collector road. I agree with Hannah's rendition of it that if you had more residential coming to the west, you'd have citizens looking. You're going to have the predominantly manufacturing type facility. There's going to be other people driving through, no question, and you will widen the road. But again, they've cooperated the tenants with easements in the past to the city for sewer that you needed. Never held you up on anything. They're fine with it, and they are cooperating as far as dedication for road wide right of way in the future here. So again, we appreciate your consideration. Look forward to going to the Public Area Plan Commission. I know you've got a busy agenda tonight.
Yeah, we all know Seeger is going to not be in favor of it, so I can safely speak for him. I'd like to keep it the 1,000-foot, and I'm not too keen, honestly, on the dual poles sitting there. If you could maybe get the poles together and it on one whole thing, I'd maybe be considering that. But yeah, I'm going to set it back a little bit and one pole, not two.
Why is this two projects? Why wasn't it presented when you came for the first project and included this one as opposed to an expansion?
I can answer that. So we started off with the first project. You know, we're far along on that, and then the Bennetts said they were interested in doing a second project. They have financial reasons why, you know, it makes sense to them. They don't have a lot of use for the land because of kind of what we talked about with the floodplain. They're trying to set themselves up, so we just threw in an application with the utility. And there was capacity for it. We reviewed the ordinance, even the one that that was put in the staff notes. It didn't show Cornelius Road as a collector road. So we submitted, you know, we started working on the project.
The 1,000-foot I'm not really keen on deviating from that one. One of the other questions I have is about the floodplain floodway. So the state has conditions for solar panels, how they will allow them within a floodplain. Floodways are much more challenging with the review and the approval process. You've got a BFV of about 645. Your lowest panel is about 640. So you're below the BFV in here and certainly below the floodway. Are you guys reassessing doing a new flood study through here? Did you do that for the piece to the north?
Yes.
All right. And did IDNR approve or conditions on how to approve that?
We did. We took DEIs did their study. They shared it with us. We took their study and added our poles in there and showed IDNR is just looking to see if it's going to increase the floodplain, which it doesn't.
Yeah. And I'm less concerned with the pole mounts for the actual solar arrays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as long as they're not tilting and the base of them are not in the actual flood, you know, that's fine.
Yeah.
I'm more concerned about the fence. It's an 8-foot chain link fence with slats. So you create an obstruction within floodplain and floodway. That's my concern. Is IDNR authorizing that, or are they requiring you to change it? Because that would deviate from our requirements.
They didn't have any comments on the fence. So
they're allowing this to go within a floodway?
Yes. Right. And then also, we work with DEI, who also reviews it, and they also look at the same report that we submit in. The fence has not come up. I can certainly speak with DEI about that to see if they have any concerns with that. Typically, there's not. I mean, it still lets the water through and comes through. The only concern would just be maintenance if there's...
Well, debris.
The leaves and the corn.
The creeks have recently been thing cleared out, but any debris that does catch, you know, there's upstream farms quite significantly. Christy, would you tag that to something for a follow-up for me?
Sure.
Because I would really appreciate understanding that, to know that we are not going to have flood issues being created by fences within floodplain floodway. I mean, that's a major concern that I've brought up and haven't seen an official response yet anyway on that. So that'd be good. This is a separate special use from the original, correct?
Correct.
The annexation, rezoning, that was all done, but this is a separate request. Now, special use for solar is a accessory to the underlying, which here it's agricultural use.
Correct.
And we have a ratio, a percentage that's allowable. I know there's an exhibit within the packet. What is the lease limit, or what are the lease limits of the property that you guys are leasing?
We haven't established the actual limits of the lease, the fenced in area. We have calculated that.
And I saw that that's the exhibit that's within the packet, the fenced area.
Yeah.
However, once you guys take use, I'd be very interested to know if the lease is allowing agricultural uses to still continue on the balance of the property, or if it is going to be in just prairie, grass, or because you have two uses, you've got prairie grass, and then you have just turf.
Agricultural uses still will be permitted.
But is it actively being used as that, or is it being prohibited with the agreement? Because I have concern, if we're not meeting that requirement, that percentage, are we creating a violation here, or are we not meeting that?
Again, so there's no prohibition on lease against any kind of agricultural use. Right now, Gary has a mix. He's done row crops, corn and soybeans,
right.
And when it gets closer to the creek, he's actually been very active, and you've seen HD out in the tractor in better times. He's not feeling too good now with failing hay, and they'll continue to hay the ground, and probably some row crop, but hay for sure, so it will not be just prairie.
I was going to say that that's conflicting then with what's presented. That's why I want to understand. If you're saying that they are going to be farming some of this, that's not what's shown on the plan.
On the area not within the fence, there will still be farming. The area within the fence will be solar panels and the equipment and the pollinators.
Can we get clarification because the landscape plan shows
different
than that?
Sure, we can review it with Stephanie.
I would appreciate that because those are my
legitimate questions.
Yeah, those are my three concerns: floodplain, floodway, setback, and the actual percentage.
And again, we knew the setback was an issue, but as I say, we're not anti any of the ordinances as we sit today.
Correct.
Yeah. That's it.
You got anything, Ken?
I kind of support Dan's thing, and I would just want to make one comment. Be careful. If it sounds like you're trying to sell this solar as it can power a data center. It can't do it.
Oh, no.
No, it can't even come close.
No.
So the power sources you're going to need for data centers, it's not going to be solar. Just keep that in mind when you start. Because that's what it sounds like to me, that I hear data center and I hear solar farm. And that's not going to happen.
Now, the solar will be strictly community, and there is a breakdown in the chart of how many residences it can serve, and, of course, the lower utility bill. But you're absolutely right, Ken. We will not. We don't
close.
Have the Bill Gates nuclear mini plant like out in Montana.
We'll probably want some kind of peaker thing or some other kind of power source over in that area.
Yeah. Well said.
All right. Everybody good on that one?
Thank you for the time.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
EDC 2025 EDC 2025-06 115 LLC rezoning and PUD.
Okay, so the petitioner is represented by their attorney, Richard L. Williams. The petitioner is Patrick Winninger, who is the contract purchaser, and as well as the owners, the Schallheimers. I'll just give a brief overview of the plan, kind of keep it short. The redevelopment request is of 14 acres at 1115 South Bridge. This is formerly the Perfection site, into a new development called Fox Haven. It's a multifamily residential townhome project. The rezoning will occur on 13-acre parcel, so the rezoning would be from R1 to R4 for 18 townhome dwelling units, 18 townhome buildings with 105 dwelling units, and then the 1-acre parcel along 47 will remain zoned B3 for future commercial use. As I mentioned, there's 105 townhome units within 18 buildings, situated in Garrett kind of style, kind of like a barrack style, with a single access point off of Illinois Route 47. The lots are positioned along an internal roadway, which ends with two stubs to the south adjacent parcel, which is the Prairie Garden subdivision, but it does not align with any existing connection. The petitioner does propose to provide a secondary access point to the site via right-in, right-out, right-in access point off of Illinois Route 47, but that's pending IDOT's approval. The concept plan also includes storm basins, stormwater basins, green space, pedestrian walkways, and it does provide for sufficient resident and guest parking, totaling 345 spaces. So for the PUD request, they are asking for modifications as follows. So the request of a PUD has to align with guidelines in our ordinance, and it aligns with standard number one, which is landscape conservation and visual enhancement. This is because the project proposes to preserve a mature tree line of buffering to the west, which is between the parcel and the adjacent Greenbrier residential subdivision. Vehicle access includes an access point, as I mentioned, off 47, future emergency cross access. There's a building separation, and design standards are met, even though R4 district does not require building separation. It's only in a R3. They have made an effort, and they have exceeded or met those standards for separating buildings. The petitioner is requesting relief from the 50% masonry requirement on the facades. They're asking to reduce it to 25%. They did provide an elevation, and staff's review found that the allowable reduction would be to 20% masonry based off of some major architectural features that they're proposing, like dormers, bay windows, and covered porches. They did have a sign component that they're requesting. It's a total of 25 signs for the site. Most of them are temporary. Most of them do conform with our requirements. However, there's two signs that exceed our requirements. There is the project sign. They want it to be 120 square feet, I believe 12 feet tall. We have a maximum height of 32 square feet, and I believe 6 feet tall. And then they have a banner type sign, which only exceeds our height, maximum height requirement by 1 foot. There is also a request of a billboard type sign, which is strictly prohibited by our ordinance. So staff would only support the two signs, the post signs, rather than the billboard type sign. Comprehensive plan, if approved, would have to be amended. This parcel was deemed for future land use of commercial office. It would be amended to a mid-density residential land use, and staff would initiate that process. And the petitioner is working with our engineer to address some of the comments that were provided in the letter by EI as part of the review. Public hearing for this is scheduled for February 12th, and that's before PCC, and then City Council, we hope to have it before you at the March 11th meeting. The petitioner is here to either do a presentation or address any questions that you may have.
No real presentation, just any questions, or we brought the rendering. We want to pass this around, and then any of the photos, screening photos to the west of the existing landscape buffer.
This is your guys' words. I'll let you guys go first.
I know the owner of the property has called me multiple times yes. Wanting to know what he can do to sell it. How long has it been for sale?
Since 2008.
The owner's actually here. Yeah, I know. A long time.
Yeah. 2008 was the first time it was listed. 4 years, recession, took it off the market, put it back on 2015. So, about getting close to 10 years. Multiple interests. I mean, you name it. I mean, Dave here mentioned he's been around here for four times. I was joking with my attorney. We were joking back 7 years ago, three times a charm. We're on like number 10. So really like to see this go through. I mean, it's getting hard to maintain. It's a hardship. I live in Michigan now. I do want to see it sold. I'll say on one hand, you know, R1 came up when I put the golf range in as special use. 1991, 92. I mean, the Bulls won the first championship in 91. Clinton was president. I'm not sure that should apply anymore. You got R1, R2 on one hand, single family homes with on 13 acres out there. And on the opposite side, you could have apartments. If that's a no-go, I think townhomes is a good middle ground. And I don't know what I would do with the property if it couldn't get townhomes. I mean, economically, things have changed, and single family homes on that size acre isn't going to fly. I mean, it's been looked at. I don't know what else to put out there. Offices, we've had a mattress factory, the golf dome came there, City Public Works looked at it. Yeah, just multiple interests, but no real sale. That's about all I can say. The front, everybody always wants the front. 1 acre, B3, great. You know, but it's cut off to the back. I hear, you know, I'm really interested in what the Greenbrier residents will say. I hope they're okay with it. Kind of dealing with them, I closed the business. I was concerned about golf balls going in the yard. That would have been some time of lawsuit. That was a good time to close it in end of 2016 is when it closed. Technology just balls flying out there and worried about someone getting hurt. Probably a good thing because COVID came up later and not sure we would have survived that. But don't want to take up any more of your time. Just here to kind of whine as a property owner trying to sell for 10 years. And, looking for your support to make that happen. I think it's a great plan. Been in contact with Patrick directly. Good guys. And I know you guys work on behalf of the residents. Some of you might live in Greenbrier. So I know you represent them. I mean, and you haven't let them down yet. I mean, it's just now I'm voicing my opinion to help things go through that would help me out. So thank you.
Do you have any other comments?
Well, I know I talked about the possibility of doing an age-restricted, like Garden Circle is. Is that something that's not feasible, or is that something that I just don't think is going to be able to sell the units?
Yeah, I don't think we'd be able to sell them for where they're at and, you know, what the market has right now.
And these are going to be owned units. These aren't going to be leased.
Correct. They're owned units.
Can you get anything?
Nope. I bought my house without being there at nighttime, so in the late 90s, and I moved in. I'm like, what's that glow in the trees? It was a spotlight.
Lights are still there.
But yeah, there have been multiple times where we've tried to come some kind of way of developing this property, and it seems like it always runs into a dead end. So
you guys are fine with it. I'm fine with it. I know Patrick's reached out to all of us. You guys have done your best to reach out to us and concerns. So if they're fine with it, I'm fine with it.
They have said that they would work with staff, whatever direction you guys want to give them. I think when we met, I talked about that.
Yeah, we've worked through some of that stuff.
Yep, and also David Schultz, H.R. Green, engineer record. They also, after this meeting, want to set up a town hall with the Green Ride residents as well. So I just wanted to highlight that as our next step. And also, you know, on Brent's part, you know, the site does have those constraints. Everything's built up around it. It is what it is. So we're trying to make the best of it. I think we put the best plan forward. We took a lot of consideration from staff and from committee and everybody. And I think I'm on round 6 with my plan. So, you know, try to accommodate that. So if you had any other detailed questions, let me know.
All right. Yeah.
I think it's generally a good plan because of the constraints on this site. It's a difficult one. The commercial will be an interesting piece to see if it actually can accommodate anything. I know a small piece like this, I hope that it can sell and flip something into it, but worst case scenario, have you taken a look at, you know, what would be the case if you didn't? Could you flip another, you know, 8 units into there, you know, in order to, maybe if this goes through, you rezone that front back to the residential and you put some more units in there. Worst case scenario, because I don't want to see a vacant piece that doesn't flow.
Sit there. Yeah. Yeah, that's something we can kind of look at with the site plan and see how things flow and would fit in there.
Yeah. The signage, I know it sounds like a lot of signs, but most all are temporary. I'm usually the, you know, they just stick to about signage. The off-site sign. is it being considered off-site sign because it's on the commercial property at the front, or are they asking for one elsewhere, a billboard elsewhere?
They said off-site, so they didn't indicate where this off-site sign would be, but they would want a billboard.
And somewhere
just, yeah, else. And that descriptor is not permitted.
I just want to see if it was because it was considered on the commercial property, because that's where I saw the markup on the little signage. The fact that it is up to 14 feet, I think I saw in the petitioner's paperwork, it's on Route 47. It's a singular permanent sign. Is it going to be, my question would be, would it be dual purpose for the commercial and the residential? Or is it singular just for?
It would be just considered off-site being on the commercial piece, and then it would just be to market the residential.
And that, but that's a permanent sign?
No, just temporary.
Okay, so. Yeah. When we go through these signs, there is not a permanent monument for this, so it is a temporary sign. Right?
Yes, yeah. Those, all those signs would be temporary. Any of the permanent monument stuff would follow the...
In that case...
There was no size given for that sign.
Okay.
So that's why, and because it was described as a billboard type sign, which is strictly prohibited, if you can find a sign type that is permitted in the ordinance... And then we can look at dimension.
Work on that. Okay. Yeah, that's a better clarification that they are all temporary. That is a marketing sign. I think that's where we want to go. That gives me a little more comfort that it's short term for the purpose of the sales. This is hard because there's a very small window going down 47 to sell. So, okay, that gives me a little comfort there. I don't have an issue with the reduction in the masonry. I think actually the architectural product looks good. Ryan Homes, it's not a bad product there, so the gables, the projections on the facade, I think it's good. Now, will it be 100% of the homes having this elevation, or will it, because we allow 75% to have masonry, 25% without?
Yeah, my understanding would be 100% of the homes would have this elevation.
But honestly, I'd be okay if they went to just the 20% at 100% as compared to the higher percentage on a 3/4 of them.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
I know that's a little issue that's there. And then the last one, with the site plan, I'm glad that the landscape is being kept to the west. The concern I have with the west buffer is that 6-foot privacy fence. That creates a no man's land behind the fence between the existing vegetation. It's a 40-foot space. That would be from the existing evergreen row to that fence. Solid fence. That, for me, the length of this property, that creates a problematic maintenance area and, dead man zone. What happens in that space? It's essentially cut off from the townhomes, but it's also separated from the residents on the other side. I could see potentially residents encroaching into this space because now it's behind a solid fence. I get the fence idea. Maybe it's a split rail fence. By having a solid fence barrier there, I don't like that.
Okay.
I think if we could work with staff. Is it something that staff recommended, or how did that come about?
So because of our ordinance in the transition zone C, it has a fence requirement, but it also, you could substitute a fence with a wall or a berm. So I think they were just putting in the fence because they wouldn't have to build up earth for a berm.
With
or
landscaping, if they enhanced it with some shrubs, bushes, because there's already a significant buffer there. If they enhanced that, do we have a workaround in lieu of the 6-foot solid fence?
That could be a deviation as part of the PUD application if they're requesting that.
Maybe something like that.
I think that would be a good request. I mean, we want to keep the evergreens and that full vegetation there. So substituting, additional ground cover / bushes and things like that and staggering that to kind of create a barrier. Fill in the gaps.
Yeah.
I would stay away from trying to do any type of berming.
Yeah.
I don't want to create any type of drainage issues on the green barrier side and then, the vegetate or the drip line and the roots and the system and stuff like that.
Good point. It's nice to see something happen.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Now we're moving to EDC 2025-07, Kendall County Petition 2024, mile and a half review.
Yes, Nicholas Escalon on behalf of Emmett Road Solar and Janet Lynn Juice are seeking special use and variance approval for a solar farm, and the variance is specifically for section 36-282-17A of the Campbell County Zoning Ordinance to allow a solar farm on land within 1.5 miles of municipality without an annexation agreement. The property is located south of Emmett Road and approximately 0.33 miles from Illinois Route 47 and approximately 0.82 miles south of the towns at Wendat Reserve Subdivision.
Wendat Ridge.
Wendat Ridge. Or no. Yep. At the August 2024 City Council meeting, the council formally confirmed that Yorkville would not pursue a pre-annexation agreement, and now the proposed setback of 1,442 feet from Emmett Road is consistent with Yorkville's setback of 1,000 feet from a roadway network. Yorkville's 2016 comprehensive plan designation for the property is agricultural zone, and the proposed solar farm along with the Kendall County A1 zoning is consistent with Yorkville's comprehensive plan. And then lastly, this review will be going to PZC tomorrow, January 8th, and City Council on January 28th.
I don't have any issues with it.
This is where Solar feels supposed to be.
There you go. Then EDC 2025-08, Dave Hammond, Kalaka Annexation and Rezoning.
Okay, so Dave Hammond, on behalf of Kalaka LLC, they filed an application for annexation as well as rezoning to facilitate a future data center campus development. The annexation portion involves only two parcels, totaling about 63 acres, and the rezoning applies to all three parcels, which in mass total about 112 acres. The rezoning details include the R1 rezoning of the annex parcels. As you know, when a property is brought into Yorkville, it goes into our most restrictive residential zoning, which is R1. That is proposed to be rezoned to the M2, and then the existing parcel that is incorporated in Yorkville has a current zoning of B3 that will also be rezoned to M2. The M2 zoning does permit data centers, as you know, and other manufacturing uses, which should be designed, and this is from our UDO, to balance industrial development with nearby residential and commercial areas by mitigating impacts such as noise, traffic, and visual disturbances. The property itself is currently undeveloped farmland for the two parcels that are being annexed, and then the existing parcel within our corporate boundaries is undeveloped, but it was planned for a business use, a commercial use called Cobblestone North, which never developed. Significant surrounding land uses have been approved for or are in the process of seeking approval for rezoning to M2 for future data center land uses, and there's a data center project map included, so you can see where these parcels fit within. However, the northern two parcels are immediately west of the Kylan's Ridge residential subdivision, so staff took extra care to provide some conditions and recommendations for the project. Those conditions and recommendations include a 100-foot landscape buffer near the residential and roadway areas. Future land uses will be restricted under the M2. Staff created a list, which is consistent with what we proposed for the DMY parcels. And then staff requested that site plan review by City Council, regardless if the land use is a permitted use or not, is required for any future development. As I mentioned, all of these recommendations are consistent with recently recommended conditions for the DMYF project to the south and east of these parcels. The petitioner has stated they are in agreement with the proposed restricted land uses in the M2, as well as the future plan review by the City Council, but they have expressed some discomfort with the recommended landscape buffer adjacent to the residential. The comprehensive plan. Oh, I'm sorry, did I get that wrong?
Yeah, it was 34.
Sorry about that. Correct, 34. The reason why staff has recommended that is it's consistent with the comprehensive plan buffering, which has a scenic buffer requirement that has a 50 to 100 foot buffer along Eldemain, which is also consistent with what staff has proposed for the Cyrus One project. The land use future designation in the comprehensive plan is a state conservation residential. If approved, staff would initiate an amendment for the general industrial classification. And just timeline items, the public hearing for annexation at City Council is scheduled for February 11th. The public hearing for rezoning at PZC is scheduled for the following day on February 12th. And the petitioner was recommended to reach out to Kylands Ridge HOA prior to these public hearings taking place. And I will turn it over to the petitioner's attorney.
Well, thank you all. Mm-hmm. Have to turn around.
Thanks, John.
Good evening. I'm John Philipchuk. I'm the attorney for Kilaka. With me are some of the principals from Kilaka, Joe Hammond and David Hammond. And as staff reported, we are in agreement with like 90% of what the staff is recommending. Our problem was with the 100-foot setbacks along Eldemain Road and on Route 34. The point of us coming in, rezoning the Eldemain parcel and then annexing the balance and rezoning it over off of Faxon Road is to do a collaboration with Green Door and with the DMYF developments so that we can put together one large track to attract a data center campus. So that's the direction that we're going. We're trying to be consistent as much as we can with what is preceded us, and now we're looking at two large setbacks. We currently don't have such a setback requirement on Route 34. B3 zoning that we have on Eldemain Road does not have a setback requirement that's that large either. A staff I know was looking at the comprehensive plan and they put some things in your packet that shows, you know, how the breakdown was. But what I want to remind you of is even though we've got these on the current comprehensive plan, it is really not up to date with what's happened. The comp plan doesn't mention the Eldemain Road Bridge. It's not mentioned in the comp plan. This totally changes the area out there. I mean, it is now taking a big transition to industrial. For us to say that this is a semi-rural residential area, it's just not the fact anymore. And so it does take a change to the comp plan if this goes forward. And we're suggesting that under that type of land use in the future, that makes sense to do that. Under what's happened out there with the construction of the Eldemain Road Bridge makes a totally different picture. And to encourage data centers, industrial type uses, makes perfect sense. And so what we want to be able to do is obviously get the zoning so that we can come in and be a unified group seeking, you know, hopefully a big major user. But at any rate, a campus works. And so that's our goal. And we would hate to be hampered in our respects with these setbacks. And so that was why we had objected. And I felt that as a result of the comprehensive plans being the impetus for these setbacks, that as a result of the changes that have taken place out there in land uses and zonings, and the fact that, you know, the bridge is now in, it's a much heavier traffic area, it's not conducive for residential, that the board would consider approving it without putting those restrictions on it. As I understand, the Daniels portion of the development does not, they're not requiring a 100-foot buffer along Route 34, nor does it make sense, as I see it. So again, we're in agreement with almost everything else that the staff has recommended. The future uses, if we can't get a data center, I mean, that's fine. 100-foot setbacks plus, we're looking at that area over next to Kylands Ridge. That's probably a good place where we're going to be able to put our stormwater management area. So we see a great opportunity over there to provide separation from future uses just because of the inclusion of stormwater management in that area, and then we have the ability to add landscaping later. So we are a little behind the Daniels group. We understand that, but I think that there is support from the city council for that development, and we're asking for the same for our rezoning on the 52 acres over on El Domain, and then a annexation and zoning on those parcels south of Faxon Road. So happy to answer any of the questions you might have.
You guys got it?
Are you sure you don't want to put in a solar field? I know when this was first presented to us, we had some residents of subdivision on 34 there, south of it.
Fox Hill.
Yeah, they were concerned about what the buildings might look like, and I don't know if you guys provided any renderings of what you expect to erect on the property.
No, but as staff pointed out, we are going to come before City Council in the future with the plans. So we get a chance to see them, you have a chance to recommend. So I think through staff's efforts, we've been able to address it.
And I agree with you that the entire makeup of that part of the city has changed. So yeah, I think you're dead on edge with that one. So we have to be flexible and be willing to change as well. So.
Yeah.
Of course. So yeah, you might want to. So let's start with the setback issue. So okay. The setback of 100 foot, when the collective property of Kalaka Daniels, it's over 400 acres. So we're looking at a substantial piece bisected by the creek. So when you start looking at that, when Cyrus One was 229 acres, they were able to afford a 230-foot front yard setback on Elm. So, different site, yep. But they accommodated the setback. They did that. You go across the street, you've got Plano, Menards in Plano. They do have a 100-foot setback. They have a substantial berm. They have that. The only thing you see when you go by is the tops of the buildings, and you see the driveway coming in.
The ready-mix plant, doesn't it?
Exactly. The ready mix plant doesn't, albeit that is a flaw in their little design there. But you're right, the corridor has changed. But we are changing this with a purpose, and to ask for a 100-foot setback on two primary corridors that we have for, you know, preserving the view shed and the integrity to an extent, these are two-story buildings. These, if you look at it, it's going to be the size of a, each of these buildings would be the size of Target, generally speaking. You know, that's the size of the type of building. They could be smaller, they could be bigger. It just depends on the user configuration, but generally speaking, that's what we've seen proposed from Cyrus One and others of the sort. Mm-hmm. So that puts it into perspective of size and scale. So if you're doing an assembly of buildings of that sort, 100 foot is not that great on the scope of things when you're talking 400 acres. You know, along two frontages. And I know you're going to rebuttal that, and you're going to insist that, 20 foot is sufficient because that's what's in the ordinance and that's what's allowable, is a 20 foot setback for the front yard. I disagree. I think in order for us to preserve what we have along Route 34 and to make this the best potential, most successful that we can, we need to preserve that.
Well, you don't have that now with the B2. A B3 parcel along El Domain Road.
Right. We don't have that. It could be substantially more. I mean, it could be 80 foot tall, if I recall, under a B2.
And that's why, if you could be patient and not enforce that kind of restriction now, let's look at it when we get some actual plans and users to come in. You might get more than 100 feet. But we don't know at this point. But we
understand that logic.
We just don't want to say, oh yeah, we'll just cut that off and put bushes on it. But it's more than that as to how it gets configured. You're concerned about a 100 foot on Route 34, and yet our parcel, we have a small narrow window that comes down to 34. We're sandwiched between the car sales lot and a single family home.
And the Daniels property would have the same type of criteria. That's the intent, is to have the same criteria. We've got Cyrus One. Theirs is, where they measured theirs is a little odd because it's not taken from necessarily right ways, but we're approximately 200 feet to the closest drive. You know, so that's, you know, doesn't need to be 200, but if we can put that in, what I feel is it gives direction as to what the minimum standards are. What do you have to achieve? It's not wide open. You're not coming back with a plan of, well, maybe we're going to do this job, maybe we can do that, maybe we can get this approved. But if you have it now, you know what it's going to be. You know, you're not going to come back and say, well, we could do 75 or could we do 125? If you got it now, you know what you're working with. That's why I'm pushing for 100 foot on those. And I agree with the recommendation for 100 foot. On the
I just want to reiterate something regarding the 100 foot setback determination. Somewhat moot at this point, just because they do have a clause in the annexation agreement, you know, that they're supposed to come in front of us for approval for something at some point in the future before they can actually develop. So, you know, you'll have discretion basically to look at it and say 100 feet is acceptable, 200 feet is acceptable, 500 feet is acceptable, could be 20 feet, you know, it could be whatever we think is, you know, fits the property in the area at the time when they actually come in front of us and have a plan. So, you know, I understand the point about trying to get it in there, into the agreement, as 100 foot to kind of set the tone of the future conversation. However, you know, we're going to be having that same exact conversation down the road, you know, whenever a land use plan is actually applied to us.
Now, my question is too, if we put the 100 foot in there, when we do go to discuss it, can we make it less than?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You can put it wrong. And I would assume that there'd be a PUD.
When you're going through and you're looking at a piece you want to develop, you want to know what your criteria is.
Right.
If you have something like that, it's better to work with. So, all right, so that's.
Well, I just want to add something. So, there's two parcels that our property needs 34. There's a little residential area, it's about 3 acres. Right now, and then there's a little car dealership that we don't want in the hard corner. If you impose this 100 foot setback, that corner is going to be completely, his piece is going to be completely worthless. And the residential, Chris, he'll take it right to his house. I mean, so his lot will be, instead of 3.5 acres, he'll probably only have 1 acre that's even built on.
Well,
I mean, if you're going to impose the same thing on them as you're doing here, I mean, I think that's going to be a really bad hardship by most two landowners.
I would assume whoever buys yours is going to swap those up too, would be my guess. I mean, a little house by itself, he's in a hardship where he's at anyway.
So anyway,
There are a lot of variances of some kind of one as it is.
Well, I think that house is on B3.
Right,
it's commercial property.
And just for context, the B3 front yard setback is 50 feet.
Is it 50?
It's 50.
Yeah,
50 feet. It's 50.
Okay. Which is 50. So that's that. If we can talk about the piece adjacent to Kylan's 100 foot landscape setback. Appreciate that. Now, you did mention that you want to try to look into using that corner as stormwater regional.
Correct.
We know Beecher's going to connect through.
Yes.
I don't know if you've seen the plans from the Public Works Committee where we discussed that, where it showed a couple alternate layouts through there. But there was.
I haven't seen that. I don't know if you've
seen
that. Chris sent it to me, but I was running late today. I didn't have a chance to open them up.
So it basically shows where that road could come through. It shows how much land.
You have two options.
Yeah, okay, with the options of trying to squeeze it as much in through there, but with that Robroy Farm at being sold, you know, going through that property with the road, that option kind of is out the window. So you have to cut around it. So trying to protect as much of the residential to keep separation, I appreciate having this parcel up at the north to be stormwater and facilitating that. If for some reason it is developed with buildings or whatnot, I would like to have, you know, separations of about 400 feet to the nearest building from the residential lots. That gives the protections. So you got the 100 foot buffer, but driveways, parking, that kind of thing could be within that. But I wouldn't want the building to be within about 400 feet of those ones. And that's if that corner were to develop, or because I know there's a lot of floodplain. Once you put the road through there, the floodplain, once you get engineering, that's going to be a challenging spot.
Absolutely, and that's what will dictate what kind of plan we ultimately bring to City Council to look at. And depending on all of those restrictions, we'll obviously try to utilize the land as best we can, and keeping in mind trying to give the max protection for the residential.
I know the residents over there, I took 5 calls this afternoon. So they're starting to get their letters for the public hearing, I believe. So they're calling.
Actually not. Those haven't gone out. But what I did is...
Somebody circulated something there because they...
Yes, they did. I did. Because staff recommended that we meet with neighborhood associations. So I got a hold of Robert
Dello,
because he's the head of the management company, and said, here's what we've got. There'll be more coming when we get ready for our public hearing, but if we can meet, or people want to meet, Zoom meeting or what have you, in advance of that, we're happy to do it.
Okay.
So I gave it to him the day before Christmas, so I didn't expect to hear anything this past 2 weeks. So
it's
happening
today. They're getting some notifications.
Well, Chris,
that's all.
I'm glad.
But yeah, anything we can do, because they're, I know they are already concerned about that. I've had a couple residents that were concerned about the Daniels. They were already talking about that one. So that separation, as long as we can work through those. I, of course, am in favor of the reduced, or the limited number of uses. What is it, 11 or 14? That's good. And then the 20-year term on that. And you guys are good with that agreement that it's 20 years for the M use, and then it reverts back to R?
If it doesn't develop.
If it doesn't develop. Yeah. I mean, that's the... If in 20 years, we're probably looking at it before that anyways, I hope.
You going to keep running that long?
Somebody's hunting it. I don't know who right now.
Clarification, Alderman Funkhauser, you said a 400-foot separation. Were you saying from the nearest building on their lot to the property line, or the nearest building to the nearest residence?
400 feet from the Highlands Ridge and Blackberry subdivisions to the nearest building. And that would be whether it's an accessory or the utility component, because you've got the building and then you have the generator.
So from Highlands Ridge property, nearest property line.
Nearest property line to the actual building.
Okay.
Well, and as I said earlier, we wouldn't want to agree to that today,
but
certainly you're making us aware of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because the greater the separation, if there should be a building in that corner, the better. Because that's going to kind of dictate what happens up there.
That shrink right there.
It
looks like stormwater management.
It does. Yeah,
but I don't want to commit until we've got our users.
Don't worry, I'll be pressing you between now and the time the plan comes through.
Okay. You guys? Any other comments?
Kind of curious what the residents think about it. I mean,
right.
We had a meeting on it last month.
Mm-hmm.
And people came and I think a lot of them were like, it's design dependent. We really want to know what it's going to look like when we pull out of our second unit. So. And then I think the part says we still have the ability to.
Yeah.
Have some flexibility with the setback, so that's always good. But I'm sure we can find a happy medium if we.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, thank you for your time.
No problem.
Not that bad.
All right. EDC 2025-09515 West Washington Street variance.
Yes. Kyle Cornelius is seeking variance approval for the property at 515 West Washington, that's located at the end of the cul-de-sac on West Washington Street and immediately south of West Fox Street, for the purpose of constructing a fence that extends beyond the front plane of the primary building facade. The location of his home does result in the home's primary building facade facing the curb of the street rather than a straight section, so the front plane extends along a portion of what would typically be considered a side yard. The petitioner's specifically requesting variance from Section 10.5.5 fences in the UDO, and along with the unique configuration of the home's layout, the setbacks of the home further impact the property's layout. For example, the front yard setback is 78 feet. That pushes the home further back on the lot, And then the rear yard setback significantly is reduced at 15 feet, further affecting the home's placement on the lot. So together, these factors of the front yard setback, the rear yard, the reduced rear yard setback, and the home's location at the end of the cul-de-sac, and the results in the primary building facade extending into what would typically be considered the side yard, and it creates challenges in adhering to the standards of Section 10.5.5. Staff is seeking input from EDC, and then there will be a public hearing on February 12th.
Yeah, this is a unique property from what I understand, so I'm okay with it. As long as the rest is around that.
Is the fence already up?
It is.
And that was kind of behind the eight ball, so.
Right.
I don't have an objection to it. It's okay.
Yeah, I'm good.
It would be a challenge to say no to it since it's pop. That's more of an issue that we have, you know, staffing side of things, authorizing things before they're actually done. Staff notified them that they needed a variance, but it was after they issued the permit. I don't know how that happened.
I just want to be clear. We talked about it internally, and we thought it was a no-brainer. When I talked to the mayor, I think it had a conversation with the petitioner, and had asked us to just issue the permit in advance of the variance, given the construction schedule, the contractor that had been hired in the winter season, obviously. So this was done in consultation with the mayor.
Understood. So process, not relevant here, I guess. But that's a whole different issue that, you know, we forget about process. But this one is truly unique. When you look at it, if you were to look at the streetscape, the front plane to the adjacent home, it does seem to fall in line with what you think is a front yard. This home positioning, it's just very odd and difficult. So I wouldn't object to it in that aspect. The only objection is the process that this went through for approval.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. EDC 2025-10, Costco PUD Amendment Special Use and Final Plat. All one shot.
Okay, so the petitioner is Stephen Cross. He's representing Costco Wholesale Corporation. He's requesting approval of about 160,000 square foot retail warehouse that also includes a standalone fuel station and the subdivision of two parcels into three lots for future commercial outlots. So lot one is the Costco warehouse, and it'll include the fuel station. That's about 26 acres. Lots two and three are the two outlots that will be subdivided for future commercial development. And then the stormwater management is about 3.4 acres. There's an update, so you have a plan in front of you, and the updated site plan, and there's an updated elevation rendering has been submitted by the petitioner post the memo going out. So the updated site plan now aligns with the revised traffic impact studies recommendation to modify the Veterans Parkway Tuma intersection from full access to three-quarters access. The site plan prepared by MG2 was dated January 3rd, and it also includes parking details showing that the parking now is totaled at 956 stalls, which is 855 initially with construction, and then a future 101, which is different from staff's memo, which showed 980 stalls in the previous rendition of the plan. The updated building elevation renderings highlights a minor, very minor change to the plan. The CMU block material, the color is changing from a buff color to a darker tone burnt umber, which is really indistinguishable. I think they have elevations they can show you. But Costco has recently adopted this as a new standard color for all new buildings, and the petitioner just wanted to ensure that the renderings were accurately reflected as part of the project. A summary of the PUD required. So they are amending the PUD of the existing Yorkville Crossing development, as well as asking for a special use for the fuel station. This is all consistent with procedures that we do for all fuel stations require special use. So the deviations that they're requesting are five. The parking, we have a maximum per our code, and this site would require a maximum of 387 parking stalls. They're asking for the 950-odd stalls. That is because that is more consistent with their operations. They are asking relief from installing 8 charging stations, which is required for every so many parking stalls that you put in a commercial development. They are asking to increase the light pole height from our standard max of 35 feet to about 36.5 feet. And then the building facade, they're asking for a reduction in the masonry from our required 50% to about 15 to 16%. And landscaping, there's adjustments to the foundation and parking area requirements that they feel are needed for customer and operational needs. So staff is supportive of all of the deviations that are requested. Some highlights from the site plan: the warehouse is centrally located. It's oriented toward Veterans Parkway with a parking lot on the south and east sides. Stormwater basin and landscape buffering zones enhance the aesthetics and manage some of the runoff. The fuel facility, which will be located as part of the lot one, accommodates 16 pumps and up to 72 cars in queue. And all the proposed signage is compliant with our ordinance. Vehicle access, as I mentioned, has 6 access points. There's a private internal loop around the warehouse, which connects the fuel station and ensures cross access for the future commercial lots. And then pedestrian circulation. They accommodated staff's comment to add a secondary future connection to whatever happens to develop to the east of the parcel. So they have pedestrian circulation sidewalk off of Veterans Parkway as well as Countryside Parkway at the intersection at Crimson Lane. And then finally, some design standards. The building design aligns with, as I mentioned, Costco's corporate brand. It utilizes various architectural elements through the use of color, texture, and the strategic location of materials, how they're oriented so that it's proportionate to the building scale. They are also implementing a steel trellis on the south elevation, which helps soften the appearance of the building from 34. They also are requesting, are proposing, to use sustainable features like 80% recycled material in the steel and insulation, and incorporate native and drought-tolerant landscaping. So the comprehensive plan for this parcel identified it as mid-density residential. We would initiate at a staff level an amendment to the comprehensive plan to align with the commercial land use for destination commercial if approved. And then the final plat has been reviewed by EEI, and they have comments dated from December 5th, and those would be incorporated as conditions of approval of the final plat if no update has been provided. Planning and Zoning Commission are prepared to hear this at a public hearing tomorrow, and then it's tentatively on the City Council scheduled for a vote on January 28th. Larry Jurjak is here, as well as Stephen Cross, to represent the petitioner.
Good evening. As Christy said, I'm Steve Cross, Real Estate Director for Costco Wholesale. And with me tonight is Larry Jurjak. He's also representing Costco Real Estate Group. And we have Mike Stratus in the corner there. He's a Costco, longtime Costco Real Estate Consultant. And then Dan Free in the reddish shirt there with B3 Air Engineering. We're very happy to be here with you tonight, to be at this point. It's always a real exciting position when we're actually getting in front of the elected officials. And staff have been great as we've gone through this process and fine-tuned the plan and the project, so we're very grateful to staff's efforts in that. And Christy gave a real great presentation there, pretty much covering all the highlights. Larry may have just a couple of additions, if you... Just two comments there, and then we're available for questioning then.
I think I just wanted to reiterate what Steve said, that you know Christy's report was very detailed. There are 5 variations that we're seeking. We are amending the Yorkville Crossing PUD plan unit development with our Costco site plan. We did prepare a short presentation tonight. I don't think we have to go through the whole presentation.
We could
put it up, Bart.
Yeah.
Maybe if you could, we could maybe show the site plan.
It's 50 slides. You're not going to go through all of them.
This was a joint presentation for the Plan Commission tomorrow night as well, so it's, there's a little more detail there, but
good for them.
Not tonight, not for.
But, Drea, do you have it, or do you want me to pull it up?
Can you pull it up?
You said you would pull it up, so we didn't.
Okay, let me see if I can do it here.
Well, while we're waiting, we do have our architect on Zoom, as well as our landscape architect. So we have Risa, we have Amanda from Kimley Horn, and MG2 Architects is on remotely. Peter Reinhofer is in the back of the room. He is our traffic consultant. If there's any questions about any of the access points, we can review those as well.
Mm-hmm.
This is fine right here, Bart. This is fine. So, as Christy mentioned, the building is located in the center of the property, which really sets up a really nice parking field for access from the south and from the east. Detention is on the north side, and we have approximately about 7 acres along Veterans Parkway for future retail commercial development. As Christy mentioned, we are seeking a special use permit for our fuel facility, which is in the southwest corner. It's 16 pumps with room for expansion to a 5x40 for 20 pumps. So just keep in mind that the 16 pump is one of the largest fuel facilities that we have in the Midwest. And the 20 pumps, we only have one or two that we're looking at currently. So it's sized adequately. We do have 155-foot queue there for stacking and queuing with the expansion to the west. As we move the plan to the east, so we do have room. We had to expand in the future with extended queue to the west. And our expansion of the field would be to the south towards Veterans Parkway. So if there's any questions about access, we love the site, by the way. There's plenty of access points. Normally we don't have this many opportunities to provide full access driveways. As Christy mentioned, we did change the geometry for Tuma, and our center drive, driveway 4 is identified there, to a 3/4 access, so it's a left in and it's a right in, right out. Our previous proposal was a full intersection, so we've cut that back now. Full access on McHugh, driveway 5, driveway 6 is a full access. Full access on drive 1, full access on drive 2, and then a right in, right out on drive 3. Art, I guess you could go to the next slide. Architecture. I'm not going to get too specific on the architecture. First of all, I want to make sure Risa's on call. Risa, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, you are? Great.
Yeah.
So I think Christy did a great job just identifying some of the basic characteristics of the architecture. We could go to the elevations if you'd like to take a look at the... Well, this is a great slide here. This was... this was not in your packet, I don't believe.
No, it was not.
No, so this was added for our presentation tonight. It gives you an idea of where the materials are identified in the elevations. We've described our vertical metal panels, the burnt umber, a darker shade now for the CMB black. You have the insulated metal panel and metal trim at the top of the facade. And then, of course, our Costco standard landing, blue and red. The green. Risa, did you want to add anything else regarding the architecture and the elevations?
Maybe I'll just talk a little bit about the color change on the base, and just want to say that we did that because a couple things. Is one is that we wanted to provide a little bit more contrast on the building colors. it goes really well with the palette, and what it does with the darker colors, it helps anchor the building, and it's at the base, right? So it helps anchor that building. So a couple reasons why, just to tie in the colors to the darker accent channels and the coping, but also give a good base. So just wanted to share that.
Thanks, Risa. We can look at some of the renderings that were done. Bart, if you could go to the next page. These are the elevations, north, south, east, west. And then the next slide, here's the front elevation, northwest, southeast. You can see the trellis in the background. floor plan? And then, as Steve mentioned, Dan Free, our civil engineer, is here to answer any questions about drainage or what, where the storm water is going from this site. That's really the extent of our presentation tonight. We have our full team here. We'd be happy to answer any questions you have regarding landscaping, civil, architecture.
You very much knew we were getting. Appreciate it. Dan, you got any?
Looks great.
Okay.
Looks great. I'm glad that there's multiple entrances, because that was the only thing that someone asked me, how many entrances would be coming into it if we'd have it like congested, and sounds like six or so, whatever. That's a good idea.
Yeah, I've done it in a couple locations. I've had memberships here and we can roll this path. So we appreciate that. And I definitely understand the size of the parking lot. We need to be bigger.
My one issue is the deviation for the architect from 50% to 50%. To me, it's too great. You know, I can support a deviation, but 50% down to 15, 16, to me that's too far. So I would like to see more. And you know, having looked at, you know, a dozen different sites that have been built in the recent timeline around the northeastern Illinois area, I think it shows that, you know, it is doable by yourself. And I understand the brand, the concept, the look, but you know, each community has their standards. I'm glad there's a little more contrast, because I will say, I think one of the terms I used was, it was pretty bland, just because it...
The color palette.
Contrast helps significantly, but I would definitely like to see a little more masonry, whether it's the wainscot being raised up a little higher, I think something of the sort, I guess you would say the two front facades, since it's a corner.
Right.
The south and east.
Yeah.
That's...
Do you want to address anything with the additional?
Yeah, I think one thing that just wasn't pointed out in terms of the percentage material, obviously we need to strictly look at masonry and the percentage of that. But I think just to contrast, in addition to that, that we do have about 30% of the architectural metal panels as opposed to the rib metal panels. So the architectural metal panels in terms of costs are actually very comparable to masonry. So it's not in the sense that we're trying to spend less on the building. It's we're trying to steer more towards, as Christy mentioned, the sustainability, the recycled metal, the recycled insulation material, and also just simply the R value that the metal and the insulation provides versus strict masonry there. So just to put that into context there, but I get what you're saying, at least as far as when you just look at it simply at numbers, and that's why we're trying to balance out in terms of the modern design. Bringing in the metals, the different colors, the different materials to give you that contrast for a building of this size rather than just a fairly large brick building.
Right. And I've looked at the elevations, you know, I see which parts you're considering the, you know, texture, architectural panels, you know, the lighter bump.
Yeah, this would be the texture panels, yes. And then this is the rib metal.
That's the rib. And
correct.
So if you go to the right side there towards the entrance where you have the wainscot of masonry, right in, yeah, there to the left, where the wainscot is really short there, I could see increases in that, because that's not the architectural premium element. So I could see places where you might be able to increase that masonry value a little bit without impeding on the values that you want to hold for the additional premium product. So it's not a global, but it's enhanced it where you can and try to increase that value.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's my one concern that I have was the architecture in that aspect. I'd like to see more foundation plantings around this one. You know, that's one of our standards that we had. I understand operationally that can be more difficult and challenging just with the way it sets up, but there's quite a bit of landscape around the site, so that gives me a little comfort. So, and I'm glad to change to Tumor Road. That was concerning.
Yes, we're waiting for Peter to come up with that study, so we're glad to incorporate that in now.
And then, so you were requesting more parking than what we require, but you have a bank of 101 or 100 plus spaces. do you see those typically being banked elsewhere? Is that something that you believe may come in later, or you think it's, you know, what's your position on banking those?
So typically right now we're looking at 850 to 900 stalls in the Midwest. So what we looked at was what would we build initially. And we, like I said, somewhere in the 850 to 900. And usually, I think we started originally around 900 for initial parking. But as we tweaked the plan, pushed and pulled through attrition, we lose a few stalls here and there. So we ended up down to the number that we have. And we look at that as a bank, because Mr. Stratus at the end there spends about a third of his time on older stalls, like 10 to 15 to 20 year old stalls, trying to buy out 1 to 2, 3 acre parcels of land around existing Costco's where we had 750 to 800 stalls. And we're trying to buy this land. So a couple of things we got going here. Obviously, we have that odd triangle shape. If we don't need it, we will never build it. We don't want to build something to maintain it if it's never being used. So it's only going to be triggered by the need. And in this case, we also have the out parcels, which typically, if we don't have extra green space to land bank park, and we typically keep those out parcels until we know that we don't really need them.
So you're not going to actively market those initially?
Correct, not initially, but it could be a year once we get going on it. And those are two larger parcels, as Christy mentioned. So we envision the right one being divided up into three, and then the one by the gas station into two parcels. So potentially there could be five outlots there.
No, I like the land banking as compared to building. We've intentionally reduced our parking requirements. Mm-hmm. So you guys are the experts. You know what you need for your use. So
our operators know that at the back of the hand, yeah.
And then, I know this is something that's probably coming down. Are you looking for an incentive agreement, any type of incentives?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And
that should be part of the city council packet now when it comes in front of you on the 28th.
Coming soon. Okay.
Anybody else? Good. All right. Thank you for coming.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Any old business? No. Any different business? No. We can adjourn.